Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is State Senator Dave Valesky. He was first elected to the Senate in 2004 and represents the 53rd District, which contains most of the city of Syracuse and areas to the east. Across the state, he's probably best known as one of the members of the Independent Democratic Conference, a group of Democrats who broke from the Democratic caucus in the Senate and joined in a coalition with Senate Republicans to constitute a working majority. Senator Valesky, welcome to the program.
Happy to be here, Grant. Thanks for having me.
Just to refresh our listeners, can you start by giving me a very brief account of the life of the Independent Democratic Caucus?
As brief as possible, right? And we'll try to do that. Well, first of all, we formed the Independent Democratic Conference after the elections of 2010, largely as a result of frustration on the part of myself and a handful of other Democrats with how the Senate had been run in 2009 and 2010. And without going through all of that history again, things like coups in the Senate and Pedro Espada and all of that other stuff. The first 2 years of the IDC, 11 and 12, the Senate Republicans had the outright majority. And in these last 2 years, the session that just finished a couple of weeks ago, we did, as you indicated, form a governing majority, a bipartisan coalition, the Independent Democratic Conference and the Republican Conference, because no conference in and of itself had enough votes to constitute a majority. So in a nutshell, that's where we've been over the last 4 years.
And I called it caucus in my question, but thank you. It's conference.
It's conference, yeah.
So the last time you were on this program, and the IDC at that point had just joined with the Republicans or made the decision to do that.
Right.
Anyway, you had said that joining in that coalition would result in more floor votes on progressive legislation because the Democrats governing alone would have been more afraid to bring things to the floor if they might lose. That was one of the implications that you thought at that time. And it seemed kind of counterintuitive.
Yeah.
Why would joining with the Republicans do that? Did that turn out to be true?
Only partially. Mm. I had thought and hoped that it would have been true on a greater number of occasions. But the rules that govern the coalition, the bipartisan majority that we set up in the Senate and are in effect and will be through the end of this year, gives both the leaders of both the Senate Independent Democratic Conference and the Republican Conference the ability to not allow any bill to come to the floor for a vote. As a result of that, we did not see, and this has been one of the criticisms, as I'm sure you have heard and will ask over the course of this show in recent weeks and months, one of the criticisms of the arrangement in itself. The only thing I would add, Grant, we may not have had votes on all of the so-called progressive issues that certain organizations have been championing over the last weeks and months, but we did have votes on progressive issues. And I'll say so-called progressive issues. Some of those votes resulted in bill passage. Other votes resulted in failure of legislation. I'll just give you two quick examples. The SAFE Act is probably one of the most high-profile issues that was approved by the Senate in a bipartisan fashion. The SAFE Act, of course, was Governor Cuomo's gun legislation in the immediate aftermath of the situation in Connecticut a couple of years ago. That was certainly a progressive issue. That was a bill that passed and that was allowed to come to the floor for a vote and passed with relatively broad support in a bipartisan fashion. Independent Democrats, regular Democrats, and several Republicans supporting that bill. So that happened in that regard. Another bill that did come to the floor for a vote but did not achieve the necessary 32 votes for passage was what is known as the Dream Act. Mm-hmm. The Dream Act would provide make tuition assistance programs that are available for students who are seeking a higher education, make those dollars available to the children of undocumented immigrants. Those children, by the way, are receiving will pay in-state tuition rates at colleges and universities in New York. It's been that way for over 10 years now. This bill would simply open the TAP program and those tuition assistance programs to children of undocumented immigrants. That bill came to the floor, which I was very, very pleased to see. I mean, the more of these issues that come to a floor, whether they pass or not, the issue is the important thing to get a full and public airing. That bill failed on the floor of the Senate because it did not receive required number of votes for passage.
So where I'm going with this is, I guess, not the criticism of the past, but thinking about how likely is this really to change in the future if this has been our experience so far. Because now you folks have decided you're going to join with the Democrats. So, and this is being touted as by members of your conference as being a boon for progressives, that we're going to see more. Again, it's the same argument. We're going to see more progressive things come to the floor. So looking to the future, how can both of these things be true?
Right.
And are we really going to see that much of a change? Because obviously there was some calculation going on among the leadership there of holding things if they weren't going to pass. You gave me one counterexample, but sure. You also agreed with me that on the whole we didn't see this. So why are we going to see this now?
Well, I think it for those who were critical on this point that we did not see a sufficient number of votes on a sufficient number of so-called progressive issues. I have acknowledged that is a legitimate criticism. I think that's a legitimate criticism in looking back over the last couple of years in terms of how the coalition worked. However, that having been said, I and my fellow IDC colleagues have in no way backed off of the results that we have been able to produce. I think to look at the coalition over the last 2 years through the relatively narrow lens of progressive issues and what did get done or did not get done under the construct of what is a progressive issue, I think that is too narrow a definition.
Let me interject here then and say, so then why make the switch? I mean, if you're looking back and saying, hey, on the whole, it worked pretty well, so why make the switch now?
I think, well, first of all, no switch will happen until after the election.
Right.
I mean, and you know, I have to share this with you, and because I know you'll appreciate it. But there was, as we were going through this process over the last several weeks, certainly a level of frustration on my part because, you know, first and foremost, on November 4th, I think it is this year, the 19.5 million New Yorkers have to elect 63 men and women to serve in the new Senate in 2015. That's job number one, as far as I'm concerned. And it's easy to lose sight of the fact that, all right, what's the coalition going to be? If there even is a need for a coalition, Grant. I mean, look, remember, it takes 32 votes for any conference to form a majority on their own. One of the results of November 4th could be that the Republican, that 32 Republicans could be elected and they could govern the Senate the traditional way, unilaterally through their conference. The mainline Democratic conference could win 32 votes. There would be no,
right,
you know, theoretically, no use for a coalition at that point. I think it's highly unlikely that we are a 5-member conference, would go from 5 to 32. But I think you see my point. So the coalition really only comes into play when one group does not have enough votes to constitute a majority.
So let me come back and push you again on this. Let's put it this way. Why then did the IDC decide to announce at this stage in this political process that you've described that the plan is to switch? I take your caveats,
sure.
But still,
sure.
There's been a change here. And I want to come back to this in another way a little bit later in the conversation in terms of a bigger question about political representation. But for
sure.
Now, let me
sure.
just stick with that. So why did you make that decision?
Well, I think in the final analysis, the answer to that question was in part your first question to me. I
okay.
mean, you know, we had talked at the beginning of this coalition, and I had thought that there would have been a greater number of progressive issues that would have been addressed one way or another, pass or fail one way or another. Again, I think that has been a legitimate criticism of the past 2 years. And, you know, in a state that is certainly overwhelmingly Democratic in terms of party registration, as New York is and continues to, I guess, be a bluer and bluer state under that definition, that's a very valid criticism that needed to be addressed one way or the other. You know, let me give you another example because I think it underscores it. the campaign finance reform package that was included in the state budget, and specifically the public matching program, mm-hmm. There were far more robust proposals out there than what was included, as you know, in the final state budget. One of the most robust proposals was actually an IDC proposal from last year, and it went way beyond just public matching. It really I think, but I'm a little partial, I suppose, since it was sponsored by myself and my colleagues in the IDC, would have really, really been, I think, the most aggressive plan. That did not – not only did that not get a vote, we were not able to get a vote on the floor of the Senate on anything regarding public matching beyond the comptroller demonstration project, which you know of and I'm sure you've talked about on your program. And ironically enough, the ultimate irony of all ironies, the Republican candidate running for comptroller is actually participating in the mm-hmm. public matching program, even though, you know, philosophically and certainly I think from the perspective of the Senate Republican Conference, there was not a lot of support for any more, certainly any more than just that demonstration, but a little bit of irony. So again, long answer to your question, but there were from the IDC's collective opinion, I guess if we can say it that way, there were an insufficient number of these types of issues that were addressed one way or another. So as a result, as we look ahead to next year, the next legislative session, again, you know, depending on obviously the results in November. The case has been made, and I think rather effectively, that many of these issues that have not been addressed over the last few years may in fact have a greater chance of being addressed. However, let me just – I know you have another question. But the interesting thing is, you know, and this is a fact that the members of the IDC have made very clear. So I don't want – there should be no misunderstanding that there would be a greater chance of success in the future, again – depending on who was a senator in 2015, but virtually all of these progressive issues that did come up for a vote, while all of the independent Democratic conference voted as a block on those progressive issues, the regular or mainline Senate Democratic conference did not. So, you know, you look at an issue like women's reproductive health. Reverend Diaz, a Democrat, has never supported that particular issue, and I can't imagine ever would. So the degree to which, you know, you may say, well, you know, will the chances be greater next year if, in fact, this coalition comes together differently than it has? Even that answer is really dependent on who are the 63 men and women that the people of the state of New York say on November 4th that they want to be their senators for the next 2 years.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with New York State Senator Dave Valesky, who represents the 53rd District. Simple question on this. How much of this was about the governor shoring up his left flank going into an election year?
Well, the governor you know, made it very clear, and he has had a progressive agenda, clearly, and he has moved the state forward, I think, with the assistance of the IDC and the Senate in general over his really much of his entire first term, whether it's on-time budgets, fiscally responsible budgets, getting the economy moving again, job creation, tax relief through the property tax cap and the plan that we put in place this year. So I think that has been successful and positive, and I think he's going to be successful in his own reelection in regard to many of those successes and more that I haven't even mentioned here. But he has articulated many of the issues that I have raised with you right now.
But it sounded like, at least at a rhetorical level, that he did this change. I mean, he said, you know, this is going to change. I'm basically going to deliver this, and then it happened. So it looks like from the outside that he did this. And one question that comes out of it is, how independent are you folks going to be able to say you are if it looks like that's where the change came from?
Well, but his he has articulated as reasons for he's been very, very consistent, I think, in many public forums that he has talked about the issue of Senate governance. He has made clear that he has a progressive agenda that he thinks the state of New York wants passed. I mean, perhaps maybe the most high profile of those issues, the 10-point women's equality agenda. You know, we did not, 2 years in a row, we in the Senate did 9 of those 10, which were critically important issues. The 10th would not get done, arguably because of, in part, because of the bipartisan coalition. And he has made clear that is his agenda on behalf of the people of the state, and he wants to see that agenda pass. So from that perspective, it would not surprise – in matter of fact, it would surprise me more if he would not want to take an active role in doing what he could to see – his agenda passed in whatever a legislature might look like. And I think that's what you've seen over the last few weeks.
I'm Grant Reher, and you're listening to the Campbell Conversations. My guest is New York State Senator Dave Valesky, a member of the Senate's Independent Democratic Conference. All right, so I had asked you before the break about how much of this was the governor's doing. The other big impetus for this that's been discussed is a concern on the part of folks in your conference, you also in this group, about being primaried. Again, getting challenges essentially from the left or that are coming from within the Democratic Party. Right. How much of that was driving it?
Well, I think very, very little, extremely little, in fact. And, you know, from speaking for myself now and not for the entire conference, but I was certainly prepared for a primary. If there was going to be a primary, I was prepared for the primary, primarily because throughout my 10 years in the state Senate, you know, I would challenge anyone to look at my voting record. And at the end of the day, that's what we have as legislators, how we vote and identify items or areas in that voting record that is not consistent or inconsistent with the principles of the Democratic Party. I don't think anyone would have found that to be the case. So I was prepared and ready if it was going to be a primary. And, you know, that's what our electoral process is about, whether it's a primary or a general election. You run on your record. You run on your results that you hope to produce for your constituents. And then at the end of the day, voters will make their say. So I really think the issue of primaries was really not a determining factor in terms of the decisions that have been made, you know, by the IDC.
And another question now, you mentioned the way that the proposals for reform of the political finance, the campaign finance process, had gotten scaled back, and now we have this, you know, isolated experiment that we're doing in one particular race. I wanted to ask you a bigger question about reform. It's not about the IDC and the coalition per se, but it does seem to be the case that in the last few years there have been big promises of reform that come forward with a lot of attention. And then the reality doesn't pan out. They don't materialize. I mean, you can think about the Moreland Commission. You can think about the campaign finance. Certainly redistricting, would the districting process be another one? So instead of a situation of the mouse that roared, it's more like the elephant that squeaked. So do you really see that there's going to be any significant reforms that are going to get serious looks in the next session where there actually might be a real chance for something to materialize? Because I think it's fair to say that so far they haven't.
Well, reform, and I've always said this, reform is a process. Reform of any structure is a process. I've always maintained it's not a switch that's going to be flipped and someone's going to say, okay, reform is done. Let's move on to the next issue. So you had mentioned a few of the issues. We talked a little bit about campaign finance, and I think certainly much more can and should and will be done on that issue moving forward into the next session. The question of redistricting you had mentioned. And
that window is kind of closed.
Well, not really, because I'm glad you raised that. And most people think it's closed. Mm. It closed from a legislative perspective a couple of years ago, but it's still open because on this year's ballot in November, remember, we passed a constitutional amendment. Mm. We, meaning the legislature, passed a constitutional amendment to reform how we do redistricting for the next cycle, which isn't going to be until after the 2020 census. But now it's for all of us as New Yorkers to decide. So there will be a question on the ballot this year having to do with redistricting reform. So it's not as far away as you might think. Whether it passes or not, I can't really handicap the chances.
In order to keep real reform alive, then, in a sense, we vote no.
That's a matter of opinion.
To reopen the question.
Well, I think it'll be the redistricting issue. There had been some, I think, legitimate questions about how much reform could have been done without amending the Constitution in the first place. So, and I still believe that. So if the voters do turn that constitutional amendment down and send the issue back to the legislature, and in this case back to the drawing board, I'm not sure what else we'll be able to come up with unilaterally as a legislature. Now, we could go back to the people and put another constitutional amendment on the ballot, perhaps, that would be more robust than the one is there, if in fact that's what the people end up deciding via whether they pass it or whether it fails. So long way of answering your question, I guess, but those reform issues and those issues that are traditionally thought of as governmental reform, campaign finance, redistrict, and others, election reform, for example, I think more will continue to be done. I think we did do quite a bit. You know, in campaign finance reform, the only thing that gets much attention is the public matching pilot project. But we did a lot of other items in that. We did an ethics package along with that that doesn't get a whole lot of attention. We did an enforcement package at the Board of Elections. You know, a lot of these election law violations, I think a legitimate criticism has been that that the Board of Elections really hasn't had any teeth in it. Mm-hmm. So we really beefed that up through statute this year. And I think but again, there's always more that needs to be done along in those areas, and I think it will be.
If you just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher, and my guest is State Senator Dave Valesky. Well, this was a question I wanted to put to you. You have a master's degree in political science. So this is going to be a political representation question that gets at kind of the heart of what I see as potential problem for voters in terms of representation and accountability with the IDC and its switching. And it's this. I think this announcement, and you've already hit it really well in the sense that you've emphasized nothing's guaranteed. It all depends on what the results are. Right. But nonetheless, you've made this announcement about this shift in your intentions when it comes to the coalition from Republican to Democrat. I think it creates some confusion for voters because unless they're paying a lot of attention here, it's arguably unclear what the heck it is they're voting for in November. And they've got to know sort of what is the impact of my vote on the likely kinds of legislation and proposals that are going to be considered there. So can you address that? Because I think it is a real concern.
Sure. I would be happy to. And my, I guess, answer to the question comes in part from, as you indicated, studying political science, as I know you have, and also in part from serving now for 10 years in the state Senate as an elected official. And that is, and while I agree with the premise of your question, I think it has to be answered from the perspective of, and I'm not a historian, but I will say it as if I was. My understanding is that very rarely in our history, and when you think of legislative elections, I suppose you tend to think of our national legislature in Washington, but very rarely can you point to elections where the populace votes for political control of a body of the legislature, of a House of Representatives, of a United States Senate, or of a New York State Senate. The vast majority of people go into the ballot box, whether it's for a state senator, U.S. senator, congressman, assemblyman. They're voting for the incumbent or against the incumbent, but they weigh the choice that they have in that particular election and say, I think he or she is better for the job, or this other candidate is better for the job. I don't know that what you're articulating is necessarily at the top of most voters' minds in terms of, well, if I vote for Valesky, that means, what does that mean, IDC, Democrat, bipartisan? So maybe I should. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
I mean, they look at our records as individual legislators and say, he's doing a good job or he's not doing a good job, and vote accordingly.
But your district, I think, does bring up the question because it is, one might say, a purple kind of district. So, you know, I guess that's not – you're not going to have a challenger, so this is a moot question this time. But one might think a Republican in your district says, look, you know, I like this guy. He's a decent guy. But here are my policy preferences generally.
Sure.
Before he was working with the Republicans. Now he says his conference is going to work with the Democrats. What am I really getting
sure.
here?
And I'm glad you raised that because for me, the most important thing – over this last month, month and a half of these conversations about what's going to happen, what's the IDC going to do. My insistence, in addition to many of the other members of the IDC, was that the Independent Democratic Conference remain an independent conference. There was pressure for the IDC senators, there are five of us, to fold, if you will, fold back into the Senate Democratic Conference. And from my perspective, that was a deal breaker, really. Mm. I mean, that because the independence that we have gained, even though I am a Democrat and have been a Democrat, and that's really not the question, but the independence that I have gained as an individual legislator, and I'll give you an example in a minute, and the independence that we have gained as the IDC to work in cooperation with the Senate Democrats and the Senate Republicans under Governor Cuomo, Democrat Governor Cuomo's leadership, I think has been very, very positive and good for the state in general. I mean, you just look at the results. I mean, you know, it's not so long ago when we were known as the most dysfunctional legislature in the nation. You don't hear that anymore. You don't read that anymore. Sure, there are frustrations over issues that people may or may not have, but you don't have that, and I don't get that sense at all when I'm out in my community. The issue, the local issue that I really want to stress, though, Grant, regardless of the governing construct of internal to the Senate next year, and again, based in large part on who wins what on November 4th, the experience that has been gained, I have always been, as you know, a firm believer in bipartisan in results formed in bipartisan cooperation. Now, this coalition was very unique, as you know, in this country anyway, very, very unique. But there's no backing away from the intent to work on individual issues in a bipartisan fashion, doing what's best for the people of the state or for a specific geographic reason, region. The example I'll give, as a result of this coalition, and Senator DeFrancisco, I think, would say the same thing. He said publicly this already, so I'm not telling any tales out of school. He and I have developed a very close, positive working relationship with each other. You know, and not so long ago, that was not the case.
Right.
There was a lot of partisan bickering between the two of us, and it did not serve the people of both of our Senate, in my opinion, of both of our Senate districts well at all. It does now. The fact that he and I work closely together, first of all, I'm convinced, and he and I have had this conversation, regardless, again, of governing constructs in Albany, we're going to continue to work closely together because it benefits Syracuse, it benefits Onondaga County, it benefits all of Central New York as a region. And that may be one of the, at least for me, as an individual senator, one of the greatest benefits to have come out of this coalition government. It really got us working together as the two of us. You put the members of the Assembly delegation with us, and that Senator DeFrancisco said publicly just recently that he feels the Central New York State Legislative Delegation is working together more now than we ever have in the past. And from my perspective, everybody wins. I don't care whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, independent, you don't belong to any party. We're all New Yorkers, we're all Central New Yorkers, and we're working together, and that's really what the people want to see.
That brings up a topic for a program another day when it comes to politics. But it sounds like you're saying, in part, it's all about relationships, and this was a good way to build it. Let me get to the three questions at the end, and as we've done sometimes in the past, I'd like you to answer these not from the standpoint of your life, because you've been a guest on the program several times, but rather, in this case, an organization, the IDC.
Okay.
So first, what's the title of the chapter of life the IDC is currently living?
The title of the chapter of life that we are currently living, I would say, particularly given everything that we just went through, the IDC is standing strong would be the title of the chapter.
Second, what's the IDC's worst trait?
I think that we have at times have been overly deliberative, and I'm cautious to call that because deliberation is an important part of the legislative process, as you know. But I think there are times that we have been overly deliberative and maybe not moved as quickly as perhaps we should have on one particular issue. Not in terms, by the way, of this coalition government or decisions that we made to form the coalition, but more on individual issues.
And finally, what achievement of the IDC so far has surprised you the most?
I think the degree to which, notwithstanding how we started the program in terms of perhaps insufficient success on progressive issues, but how well and quickly the IDC was able to take leadership of a governing construct that, as I said earlier, is completely foreign to almost all, not only New Yorkers, but all Americans. We don't have coalition government. We're not a parliamentary democracy in the United States. So the ability that we were able to have in a two-year legislative session to put together and really change the status quo in Albany for the positive would be my answer to that last question.
That was Dave Valesky. Senator Valesky, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me and enjoy being on the show as always.
For a longer version of the conversation that you just heard, please go to wrvo.org and please tune in again for more conversations in the public interest.